This is Rocco Granato reporting for InTheCrosbyTrust.com. I'm sitting here in the Stock Exchange in Rochester, New York, after the Rochester Nighthawks defeated the Calgary Roughnecks by a final score of 12-11. But right now I have with me, and it's an honor right now to speak to this man, the 13th member of the Rochester Nighthawk Hall of Fame, number 27, Casey Zaffie. Casey, first of all, congratulations on the honor. What was your first reaction when you heard that the Nighthawks organization wanted to bestow this honor on you?
You know what, it's been 10 years since I was gone, right? So I didn't really believe it at first. Actually, it was Mike Hazen who phoned me to tell me. And he said, yeah, call me back, Zaffer. So I'm like, what does he want? Maybe a scouting job, maybe. But when I talked to him, he said, yeah, you know, we're going to put you in the Hall of Fame. And it was just, like, unexpected but amazing because, like, finally getting recognized. And that's not, when I say finally, I just mean, like, Hall of Fame is the Hall of Fame. It's like the most elite you can get. So for me, it was like, I mean, I barely slept that night. I was so pumped up.
Yeah. Now, you were talking earlier with some of the fans here at the Stock, and you know, you mentioned when you were first came in the league with Buffalo, you were brought in as a goal scorer. You were on the team. You had the Kilgores. You had Johnny Tavares. And you're out there. You had to be, I guess you could say, somewhat starstruck seeing players of that caliber. But you know, you're in the league because you are that caliber. But being with those types of players, your game obviously had to change at that point.
Yeah. I that summer I played Peterborough, I had 33 points. I think 15 goals, 18 assists. My best summer ever, basically, playing. And I got there, drafted as a goal scorer. And realized very quickly that I was good, but these guys were great. And so I had to kind of adjust my approach to the game, figure out what can I do to find a role in this team. In Buffalo, I couldn't. I didn't find that role. It's when I got picked up by Rochester is when I said, okay, you know what? I'm not going to be a goal scorer anymore. I got to find a defensive or transition role. And so Paul Day said, Zach, you know what? We love you as a D in transition. Work your butt off every day, and you'll have a spot. So I respect Paul Day for recognizing that I was changing my job, but giving me that shot.
Now, obviously, like you said, you came here to Rochester, changed your game as more of a defensive transition role. Playing with the guys that you played with at that time, and now seeing the way the game is now, how much of a change is that from back in the day, from 96, say, till now, almost 20 years later?
Well, you know what, the game now is way faster. The transition is, I mean, sadly, it's all OD. D guys don't ever transition up the floor, and O guys never come back if they don't have to. Back when I played, we had Jim Veltman, we had a lot of players could actually go for breakaways, and they would stay and play offense. The defense, on that level, there's no cross-checking. Today, I mean, the fighting has gone from the game, which some people like that. I'm old school. I think the odd tilt keeps the kind of crowd involved and it can change momentum. So I kind of think the game has been softened a bit. But, I mean.
Now let's talk about it. You mentioned fighting the way, you know, you're old school, you're all for the way the fighting is in the league. You see some of the fights that go on now where the players are tangled on the floor, they get up and they just start throwing punches. Then you have some that will actually back up, square off, take the gloves off, take the buckets off, and square up and go at it. Which do you think should be the way it should happen?
That's a good question. Because you know what? I've been in both. And when a guy starts punching you, you have no choice but to punch back. But when you're punching a guy in the mask, you're just breaking your hand. So then you're gone for the year. So I always tried in my fights, especially in Rochester, I would always back up, take my helmet off, maybe take my arm pad off, my right arm, and then go into it. At least that way, I know he's hitting not my helmet, and I'm not hitting his helmet. So that's kind of I think it's a gentleman thing.
Right.
And when you do that, when I would go down or he would go down, I would not keep hitting him. Right? You respect each other enough.
That would be right.
Now I see, you know, fights in summertime, the guy's down, and the guy's then still pumps him in the face 10 more times. So the game has changed that way. So at that level, I'm kind of glad I'm out of it because, you know, things are changing.
Right. Now, you mentioned, when you were here, you mentioned a lot about the Rochester fans. You mentioned one in general, Tim Nabb, the president of the Rochester Fan Club.
What does it mean when you when you first came here? You had about 10 to a dozen fans actually come up to you, welcome you to the city, welcome you to the family, as we like to say in
the
cross.
Buy my lunch.
They just knew all about you. Yeah. What did that tell you about the fans here in Rochester?
You know what? I wasn't ready for that. I'd never been to a place where, like I said, people knew my stats. They offered to buy my lunch. They basically, at that point, I wasn't even on the roster. I was a practice guy, right? So I'm like, well, how do these guys know? Oh, yeah, in the summertime, we saw you play. Oh, my God, these guys do the research, right? But as I got to know the fans, I realized it's just a passion. They love their team, and they travel with their team. The commitment is actually probably better than some actual players have, right? Everything in their life is about lacrosse, and I respect that so much. You know? So, really, it's a family. Like, I'm here with my mom and dad, my wife, right? And there's 20 people here, and we're hugging, right? It's like a pure respect back and forth. And I think that by making the rule where the players can't come to these events, it kind of changes the league a bit. Because the whole league was based on being a big family. We go to Philadelphia, play the game, right? Crazy 18,000 fans screaming, telling you suck. And then afterwards, go to the bar, and your crew would be there.
Yeah.
And it'd be like hugging and high-fiving, and that made the game special to me.
That's how it was. We're from Philly, so yeah. I've seen you come into the Spectrum, Wells Fargo Center, a number of times. Obviously rooted against you at the time, but admired how you played the game, as well as just everybody in the league and how all the guys are in the league. Nothing but gentlemen after the game. You root against them, you know, out on the floor. But then after everybody comes up for the post-game party, everybody's just like it is here. Cavalry Roughnecks can walk in here and they'll get applaud and no problem whatsoever.
That's what I was going to say. You know, in Philly, right, I fought Tom Hayek, St. Catharines Way. It was a great fight. I think he ended up it was a draw, but he probably won. But after the game, a group of Philly fans come up to me in the post game. I'm like, oh, here we go. I'm going to get torn to shreds by the Philly goons, right? But they bought me some food, bought me a beer. And they're like, hey, good job, way to step up. You know, we love those kind of guys. And that was a difference, right? They could have easily kicked me when I was down. But they brought me back. That's the cross fans, I think.
Yeah. No matter where you go. Now, I want to ask you, we know about the brain injury.
Yeah.
What happened? I was talking to one of the fans, because when it happened, it was so long ago, it's kind of like, okay, how did it all happen? Friend Mel told me that you were in the doctor's office and you just collapsed at that
time. Yeah, they thought I had avian bird flu or something it's called. So they wanted to do a blood test to confirm. At that point, I had blood in my brain. I was already had a brain bleed going on from a concussion. So when they did the testing of the blood, it changed the balance in your brain so that I passed out and fell again. So I had like 3 concussions in 2 days.
Wow.
So my brain just says enough, and it shut down, and then I was in a coma for a month. And like I said, luckily I was in great shape, and the doctors have told me that if I was not in great shape, I would probably not have survived the recovery from that injury. But you know what? 10 years later, I'm back working. I'm back working out. I'm back training. I'm not going to play lacrosse ever again, but I can run 10K. I can lift weights. I can do anything I really want to do today. So I'm happy.
You can lead a normal life. Yeah. Like you said, you run 10Ks, do lift the weights, play with your kids, coach lacrosse. You can't play the game you love. Maybe toss the ball around,
I still play catch.
No contact or anything like that. But you had your time in the league.
Yeah.
True gentleman to the sport. I want to wish you a happy birthday, 40th birthday yesterday. From me personally, I loved watching you play. Whether it was rooting against you or rooting for the Nighthawks to beat a team that we used to beat or whatever, just being a true gentleman of the sport, I appreciate the time that you took out to sit down with me tonight and speak of what?
Would you and your son
play
professional players?
He's a hockey goalie. He has had zero interest in lacrosse, but the funny you ask, because after tonight, after he saw what I did here, he actually said, you know what, maybe I'll try lacrosse. She's a gymnast. So she's a high level. She's going to Finland in July. So she's got the natural, that kind of ability. So both my kids are, like I said, amazing. They're both succeeding in school and life and athletics. So if he chooses baseball, I'll support him. So I would love to have him play lacrosse. Because I can actually help him. Baseball, I'm like, what can I do?
Don't know baseball. Lacrosse, you pick up the lacrosse stick, I can show you.
Slash him across the knuckles.
Yeah. I can show you how to take off that right arm pad real quick. In case you want one last thing before I end this. When Ripper announced you, and I don't know what the attendance was tonight, probably close to 6,000, maybe 7,000 there. Standing ovation from every fan. What kind of memories did that bring back?
You know what? Actually, I felt like the game where I fought Tyler Francie from Columbus before the game started, and I got ejected, and I won the player of the game, even though I didn't play in the game. That's the exact feeling I had tonight. I stopped and stepped by, I looked around, and the applause is thundering down. People are cheering, and I was like, you know what? This is why I love this game. Right? So I got to choose the person who introduced me, and I was gonna maybe do my Kazen, who was gonna coach, or maybe Mouse, but they had the game. So you know what? Next choice, Craig Ripper.
Yeah,
Rip did an amazing job. I'm not sure who put the video together, but like, the video it was perfect. I think that summed me up to a T. Okay. The odd fluky goal and a whole bunch of aggressive D and fights. That was my career, right?
Casey, again, thank you so much. Congratulations. 13th member of the Rochester Nighthawk Hall of Fame. You're in great company. The list is just, I believe,
most of those guys,
Patty O'Toole, Mike Hazen,
Paul
Gate.
When my heroes going
all
up.
Day. I mean, there's just, the list is just, it's just endless. And I'm sure there's going to be others that are going to be on there, that are going to be in this fantastic company. So again, I want to thank you again for taking the time out.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you, Casey. Again, that's Casey Zaff, 13th member of the Rochester Hall of Fame. My name is Rocco Granato, reporting for InLacrosseWeTrust.com.